DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points. Perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Corporate megastores are spending millions lobbying DC politicians on one-sided policies that send small businesses tumbling. They want to enact harmful credit card mandates that take resources away from your local credit union and community bank, leaving Main Street businesses with less access to credit, making it harder for your family to pay for everyday goods like gas and groceries. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Welcome back to the Paranormal Classroom, where we take attendance for the unexplained. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Lindsay. And we're two teacher moms talking about stuff that freaks us out. There is a legit practice, backed by psychologists and researchers, where people gather and share dreams, not for therapy, but to uncover the emotional undercurrents of an entire group. It's called social dreaming, and it's supposed to strengthen organizations or other groups of people, and it's gonna rock your socks. All right, we'll start with what's haunting you, Amanda. I wrote it in the script this week.
You didn't forget. That's
wonderful.
Didn't
forget.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, scholars. Well, we got our first homework assignment turned in. So that's pretty cool.
And it's very ooky spooky.
It's very ooky spooky. Somebody
did a great job.
Somebody drew a picture from our last episode, which was on the sledge entity. So it's pretty creepy.
Yes.
It's pretty creepy.
Now, I have no idea what order. Did the sledge entity come out?
That was last week.
And it dropped?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think you're thrown because we did.
I'm very thrown.
Every time I've been recording, I've been doing two episodes
for
Lindsay.
Yes, and I haven't edited those special ones
yet. Yeah, I've been like banking them for when you go to Europe.
That's right. And I remember, obviously, it was editing the Sludge Monster. So
thank you to the listener who did the homework.
Yes.
And I hope we get more.
New teacher's pet.
Yeah.
First teacher's pet. Well, Chicago Mark might be first. And then my mister might be the next. Next in line, which is really going to bug him if he's after Mark. Goggle Mark.
Love it.
Okay. Sam, what's haunting me? Nothing. Today was a great day. I created a little office for myself on my new deck that is still unfinished, but getting there. And I just plugged my computer in on the deck and worked all day outside in
that
the shade.
Lovely.
But in the warmth, listening to the fountain.
And birds. Lindsay's been recording
birds.
A lot of birds on video.
Because I'm a birder now, because I turned 47, and apparently that is the turning point toward bird watching and sourdough bread baking.
Yeah.
I'm never going to knit or crochet a thing in my life.
I crochet, but I guess I'm looking at my future in 8 years. What I'll be birding with
in
you.
In 8 years? You're killing me, Smalls. This one, perpetually 39.
39 a while.
Which is weird because we went to high school and college together. Good for you. You got something else?
Yeah, I'm going to tell my weird thing that happened to me this weekend.
Yeah. Please.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Because it's weird.
Anything is okay.
It's paranormal.
I hope you remember we have no bylaws. There's no contracts, nothing.
Yeah, I had a kind of a paranormal experience maybe, so I figured I'd share it. I went to check out a spiritualist church for the first time. It was like a mix of everybody. There were people who claimed to be psychic and mediums there, astrologists, crystal people, like, and there were Christians. It was just like a mix.
I didn't even know we had such a place. I told Amanda that. Like, what? Where's this magical land?
Yeah. And the people were really friendly. It was a really cool service, very different from what I'm used to. And I walk over the threshold and my eyes start watering.
Which is, for me, that's a sign that something truly paranormal is going on.
Oh, really?
Do you ever have that?
Like, no, I get allergies. So I thought it was allergies.
Oh.
I really thought it was allergies for the first, like, 10 minutes.
Okay.
But
yeah.
I don't typically have allergies for a full hour. And my eyes were watering for a whole hour.
Weird.
Yeah. And
Did you feel sad or an emotion or just was
no? My eyes were just watering and watering and watering. Like I was crying, but I didn't feel that same kind of sadness when I'm crying. Interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there and I'm like, what is going on with these allergies? And then we get to this healing circle part of the service. And this woman, a bunch of people go up to the front for a healing ceremony. But this one woman looks pretty, you could just tell she's not feeling good when she goes up there. And she's got my eye and I watch her walking back to after the healing ceremony. And she's sitting down directly behind me. Mm-hmm. I didn't know this until then. So she's sitting directly behind me. This is important, comes in later because, I go through the whole service. I went through the entire service with like eyes, water streaming down my face. And then at the end of it, I turn around just because I knew she wasn't feeling good. And I said, I'm so sorry. I can tell you're not feeling good. I'm so sorry. And she said, well, my mom is dying. My mom is actively dying right now. And I'm a medium. She said, I'm a medium and I'm just really emotional. And I didn't say anything to her at the time, but when I walked out of the building after that, the tears stopped. They just stopped. And I was thinking like, oh my gosh, what if those tears were not even my tears? And it was from this medium who was sitting behind me, maybe I like picked up on her energy.
Sure.
Or I was allergic to something in the building. I guess that's more logical, but.
Usually that would take a bit to set in. It wouldn't be like, step over the threshold, boom, full allergic reaction.
Yeah.
First of all, I have a lot of responses. First of all, I'm really proud of you for staying. Because I think a lot of people in a new environment around strangers and something vulnerable is happening that you don't understand. You're like, what the H is this? I could totally see you like grabbing your kid and being like,
I couldn't.
We gotta go.
I thought about it, but I was stuck all the way on the wall with like,
well, then you don't want to inconvenience anybody.
that's really drawing attention to myself.
That's even funnier that you thought about it, but then you were like, I'm being super inconvenienced right now, but I don't want to inconvenience anybody else.
So I'm just going to take care of myself.
I'm going to cry without any emotion. I'll figure it out later, maybe. Well, lots of kudos to you for A, going to something like that, B, sticking it out through some weird incident, and then checking on that human behind you.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder if it was just a collective, because you're an empath, I think.
I think so, too.
And I wonder if, like, as you walked in, it was a collective emotional response. It's not unusual for people to have a surprisingly emotional response kind of out of nowhere in a religious experience of any kind, a spiritual experience. And it hit you like boom, like a ton of bricks maybe walking in there.
Yeah. And that is not the first time that I have cried around someone who is sad when I'm feeling fine, but they're sad and I just start crying. It's not the first time. It's the first time it's happened for a full hour.
Yeah. I have a hard time if someone is crying, even if I don't like that person, even if that person's on TV.
Yeah.
I have a hard time not crying.
Yep. Yeah.
And I'll, like you said, feel fine myself, but it's this an instant, what is that, sympathetic or empathetic cry with them. It's annoying most of the time.
Mm.
I don't want to be crying, but I can't help it. If someone else starts crying, I often will start crying. I got to leave the room if that happens, like at work, if another teacher or kids, if it's legitimately a sad cry, I'll cry with them. If it's attention seeking or angry cry, it doesn't make me cry. Just sad.
Yeah. Well, my real cry, and you've seen me really cry, is like, I can't breathe. I kind of have a hard time talking. I can't breathe. I get all red and splotchy. So this crying I was doing when it was like an empath thing is just leaking water. None of the other symptoms, just a stream of water.
You know, I think I've only seen you really cry once.
Yeah. With the airplane thing?
Yeah.
That was a horrible day.
Yeah, and I was no help at all. I tried to be, but it backfired. Typical Lindsay.
No,
it's good. Sleeping in my son's car. Oh, man. Well, it's interesting that you talk about that as being, having an experience like that with today's story, because I think it relates in maybe a loose way, but I think it relates in terms of a shared experience, a shared emotion or experience. So let's kind of hang on to that as a drop in the bucket toward this story, which isn't really a story. It's more just
about a thing that exists in the universe that I didn't know existed.
Okay.
Until yesterday.
Sorry about my phone. Let me turn it down.
Just so popular. Okay. All right. Real talk. We know, Amanda, that you've had at least one solid lucid dream.
Correct? One. I've had a few, but one of them was crazy. Okay. We talked about it on one of our episodes.
Yeah, go back and listen to our telepathy tapes episode for more on that. But have you ever woken up from a dream and thought, was that my dream?
No.
Or did I accidentally download someone else's dream?
No, but I've always wanted to. Remember when we were young, like teenagers, and we go to a slumber party? Did you ever do the thing where you're like, okay, everybody, we're all going to dream
sleep
about the same
next
thing?
To each other.
Yeah, and you would like even try and get your heads touching. You'd put your pillows in. Am I the only one who did this? Put your pillows in a circle and all the little teenage girls' heads would be touching. And
well, you were a witch before your time. Or a Jungian therapist. Well, first of all, just about every teenage girl slumber party is mm-hmm. just a coven meeting.
Absolutely.
It's a lot of light as a feather, stiff as a board. It's some spell casting, some general witchery happening, crafts. But yeah, I think you were just ahead of your time.
I guess so. It didn't work, though. I mean, as we tried so many times. Hey, we're all going to dream about this boy, or we're all going to dream about...
You even set an intention and everything.
Never.
Wow.
Never came true.
Well, you're born for this work. Okay. So this is good. Okay, so what if I told you that doing something like that, like you just said, am I the only one who did this? It's not as weird as it sounds. It's really not. I had never heard of today's topic until yesterday, as I said, and it just kind of got my brain noodling a bit. So today's topic is part psychology, part telepathy. Think like a dream circle, like what Amanda is talking about, where you but more like where you just share your dreams openly. You get in a circle and you just share your
dreams. Oh, okay.
That you have.
You're not having the same
Maybe
dream.
Maybe engage in interpretation or whatever.
Okay.
But it's not that. So think it's like that, but it meets group chat, meets Jungian philosophy. So it's kind of a combination of these things.
That's cool you brought up Carl Jung, because we had an episode on him.
We did, synchronicity.
I'm trying to remember that.
And that synchronicity is directly linked to this phenomenon.
Okay.
So, to be honest and transparent, I still find this very mysterious to me. I don't get it, but I'm hoping you, Amanda, and our listeners can make it all make sense and maybe even applicable to my life in some way. So we're talking about social dreaming. To everyone, have you ever woken up from a bizarre or awesome dream and then, like me, while you're going to the bathroom, you Google it. You Google that stuff for a dream dictionary interpretation. Have you ever done that? No? Like you dream
probably.
Of something weird and like your teeth falling out or whatever, and you go in and you Google, what does it mean when I dream about my teeth falling out?
I've done that, yeah.
Okay, I think, yeah. I was hoping I was not the only
no.
one. I feel like that's got to be a fairly common experience. Where people Google it or find a dream dictionary online or whatever. Okay, good. Phew. So here's the deal. Social dreaming isn't about decoding your personal nightmares or figuring out why you're always late to that math class you didn't know you registered for in college.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points. Perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
That's a recurring one for me.
That's funny.
It's not even really about you at all. It's about what happens when a group of people, they can be coworkers, students, strangers, when they come together, share their dreams, and then look for patterns. The dream becomes, quote, a gift to the group, not something to psychoanalyze or judge.
Okay, this is different.
It's totally different. So this whole idea comes from Gordon Lawrence, who is a psychoanalyst at the Tavistock Institute in London. In the 1980s, so just the end of the 20th century, he developed something called the social dreaming matrix, which sounds super sci-fi, I'm aware, but basically it just means that people sit in a circle, share dreams, and then freely associate around them. No therapy, no hierarchy, just what images are coming up for us as a collective.
You know what's weird, Linz?
What? Lots of things, but what specifically right now?
What I'm thinking of in my head is, so last night I had a dream that was kind of like stuck with me. I felt like it was something special about it. And I texted Lindsay. I was like, do these words mean anything to you? And I wonder if it was, they were from my dream. I wonder, it's so weird that now you're doing an episode on dreams. Like we've had this happen before where we're kind of in sync.
It's been a while since we've had that happen, but yeah.
Yeah. Just thinking of that. It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You did.
But what you're talking about, I've never heard of it. So they're, so let me,
good,
can I clarify real quick? So they're not having the same dream. They're having individual dreams. They're not trying to tell each other, not trying to interpret what that dream meant for the person, but they're looking for patterns among all their dreams together.
And they're, and possibly, as I understand it, their lives, their real waking lives.
Okay.
So the example I heard, I'll save it. There's an example I heard in the Telepathy Tapes episode from this week that I'll come back to. Because that's the one where I was like, oh, this is fascinating. So, and it's a synchronous stuff. So we'll come back to that in a second. But this is not therapy. And there's no, like, moderator or therapist in the room or anything. It's just they're all on an equal playing field.
Okay.
And it's not like the movie The Matrix. It's more of a, I think of it like a woven mat where everybody's lives and individual lives, individual dreams are kind of woven across and over and under each other.
Okay.
In a, like a mathematical matrix more than like choose the red pill or the blue pill.
Yeah. Matrix. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great visual though. The woven.
Yeah. Mat. So it's just everybody's ish. How does it relate to each other? And there's crossover, there's intersections and just looking for those and identifying them.
Okay. I'm looking forward to like a specific example when you get there.
Okay. But I think my first question was, but why? What's the point? Right? So if it's not therapy, if it's not just to get to know each other better, what's the point? The goal of this kind of work, according to the Tavistock Institute website, is to uncover the unconscious group thoughts. What's lurking under the surface of a community? That's why it's important that it be this, people from the same workplace or in the same field of work.
Oh, wow.
Or the same church organization or the same family or the same whatever.
It's like a temperature stick, like checking the pulse of a group.
Yeah. And then you don't, no one psychoanalyzes it. You just draw connections. So to identify common themes, fears, hopes, solution ideas, etc., the dreams become a tool for social thinking.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to put it in a scenario. Tonight. We have a lot of planes, sorry.
It's a beautiful sunny day, that's why.
I'm thinking about us. We've been in a group situation, a work situation together where the climate wasn't great.
It was broiling.
And I wonder if I'm thinking faster than I can talk. I wonder if we had done that in this scenario, if the whole group would have uncovered themes.
It's so weird that you're saying what you're saying
right
now.
Of what we were all experiencing.
So I literally had the same exact thought today as I was writing this and researching it. Had the exact same thought and imagined that if we as a staff had gone to the cafeteria, gymnasium, auditorium, whatever, and been led through this practice of social dreaming, that like themes that may have come up would have been like the stairs of the school crumbling beneath our feet as the kids walk up, the walls caving in on us, just sort of imagining what kinds of themes might have started to come up in our dreams if we had collectively shared them, and how cool that would have been to not only identify that I'll speak for myself, wasn't alone in feeling the way that I was feeling, but also maybe there could have been some strengthening to come out of that in identifying group solutions and things.
Wow. I don't know. It's fascinating. It's
a possibility. You have to be vulnerable though. There's a huge dose of vulnerability.
You also have to remember your dreams, which I don't always remember. True.
And I think if people who get into this more as a practice, mm-hmm. there's journals and there is a bit of crossover with this and lucid dreaming and astral projection, actually. There is some intertwining of those things.
Neat.
One practice of one of them can influence you with others. So
neat.
So now here's where it gets cool. And I think a little bit creepy. In these dream sharing groups, people sometimes start reporting similar images or dream motifs without knowing each other beforehand.
That would be the coolest part to me. Just an experiment to see if other people are on the same wavelength or whatever you want to use.
So here's that example from the telepathy tapes. There was a group of doctors in southern London. It was mm-hmm. They were spread out by hundreds of miles. They didn't know each other. It was a doctors' conference, medical doctors, and they had been invited to participate in this dream sharing, social dreaming workshop with the man who's being interviewed on the telepathy tapes, whose name I don't know off the top of my head. But anyway, they get going on this. They're all a little trepidatious, judgmental, unsure, uneasy, but they get it. They trust the process. They go with it. And one doctor shares their dream. You just start by who has a dream to share.
Okay. Does it have to be the night before? It has to be recent.
I think so. Yeah, recent. Okay. Within the last 3 to 4 days, as I understand it. So ideally the night before. This person stands up and talks about how they had a dream that their parents were lost in the rural parts of India, and that they didn't have any way to find, they didn't know where they were, their maps on their phones weren't working, nothing was working, but they were able to get a hold of this doctor back in England, and it became that doctor's purpose or mission to responsibility to solve the problem for them, to triangulate their location, to get them help. And they just had this sinking feeling in the dream that if they didn't, they would be very quickly without food and water and they would perish and it would mm-hmm. be all their fault. Mm-hmm. And then they woke up. So as they're talking across the room, another doctor lets out an audible gasp.
Okay.
And stands up and says, "You're never going to believe this, but," and I can't remember the time frame, "but within the last few days, my parents were actually stuck in rural India. They're in their 80s. The only person they could get a hold of was me on my cell phone here back in England. And I, fortunately, it was only 6 hours. I was able to triangulate their location with the help of local authorities and get help to them within 6 hours, and they're fine. But I had that real life experience recently."
Oh my gosh. This is wild. So what you're implying is your dreams could be the actual experiences of other people here on Earth.
Collective consciousness stuff.
Which is wild. So some of my favorite dreams are when I'm having the beginning of a relationship, the beginning of a romantic relationship with all the flirting and all the cool stuff. Those are my favorite dreams to have. And I now thinking, what if I'm actually experiencing what other people somewhere on the planet are having this great,
I mean, it's very possible.
Not wild?
And you're a romantic at heart. Yeah. You love that bit. And who doesn't love that first part of
That's of my favorite. Those are my favorite dreams.
The unknown.
Yeah, I mean, they're way better than, falling off a cliff dream. Gosh.
I have dreams. I haven't had one in a long time, but every once in a while, I'll have a dream where I can run forever and never get tired, never get sore, just run, which is hysterical because I am the antithesis of that in my waking form. I can barely run to the mailbox and back.
Yeah. This is kind of blowing my mind because I'm in my dreams. I never really feel like I'm me. I'm just mm-hmm. the main character.
The protagonist. Yeah, but same.
I'm not necessarily I don't look down and see my chubby legs and,
right.
You know what I mean? Feel my sore feet.
And it's not very rarely in a place I recognize.
Right.
It's like something, with sometimes it's like recognize. A hybrid of my childhood home and mm-hmm. my imagination, or what I think is my imagination. But most of the time my dreams take place in something it feels like my brain just made up, but maybe it's not just making it up. Maybe it's a real place somewhere else.
Yeah. And you're just like, I'm playing the part of, this is going to break my brain all week.
You're
I've
welcome.
Never heard of this.
Yeah.
I've heard people say, "Oh, your dreams are experiences in your past life," but that doesn't make sense to me because a lot of my dreams are modern times.
Well, sure. So, and I think a lot of our dreams in REM sleep are also just a, like a cash clearing of the computer in our heads, where we have to, we got to go through and process things and make sense of things. Mm-hmm. And, our brain, I think, decides what to keep, what to lose, you know, kind mm-hmm. of files mm-hmm. things away. Very inside out. Like, I feel like there's little,
when you're asleep, they get to work.
Yeah.
The little yeah. creatures,
whatever's are up there. But I mean, it could also be reflective of parallel universes or past lives, or I don't know. That's what we say in this all the time. We don't know. We don't have the answers. We're just exploring curious things because we're curious people.
I've never though thought that I was could possibly be experiencing what someone else is experiencing.
Me neither.
That's so cool.
And I've just had this thought. I wonder if, and I don't know if, because I haven't looked, but because I just thought of it, but I wonder if there's like a Reddit type of thing where you could drop your dream bank stuff. Like you put in, I had this dream. It was not me. It had nothing yeah. to do with my life. Here it is. If anybody relates to it, let me know.
Well, now I know what our homework's going to be for this week, but for sure. I mean,
you got to create a dream bank.
Create a dream bank. That's a really cool one. Idea. But poor
it's
people.
It's probably been done. Again, if we think of it, someone else has probably yeah. already done it.
I feel real bad for the people who are dreaming of my life.
Like, oh, God. They're like, could I just take it? I got to start drinking. I got to eat chocolate ice cream way later before I go to bed because these dreams are boring. I have really weird dreams if I eat too late. Do you?
No, I haven't noticed that. I have weird dreams.
If I eat anything after 8 p.m., I'm going to have weird dreams and a hard time sleeping. Okay.
That's wild.
I know. It just gets you thinking. All right. So, it's not like, oh, you dreamed of a spider. Let's Google that. What does that mean? It's more like, why are five of us dreaming about crumbling staircases or...
Corporate megastores are spending millions lobbying DC politicians on one-sided policies that send small businesses tumbling. They want to enact harmful credit card mandates that take resources away from your local credit union and community bank, leaving Main Street businesses with less access to credit, making it harder for your family to pay for everyday goods like gas and groceries. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Spiders running up and down our hallways.
Right.
Like, what's going on that we all have a similar theme happening? So, and here's the twist. Some people, researchers namely, think this goes beyond psychology. They bring in the idea of psi phenomena, telepathy, precognition, or even, as we mentioned, collective consciousness.
Yep, psi phenomena is cool. Look it up. It's PSI, if anyone's curious.
Especially when dreams start referencing events before they happen. And I was, like, precognition type of stuff. I was, you know, doing my moderately shallow dive today and trying to find information. And I wanted to find examples of that, of, like, social dreaming that predicted
mm-hmm.
or there's some evidence to show it could have been a prediction. And I couldn't find anything that I could hang my hat on. So
right.
I didn't include any. Too loosey-goosey, too coincidental,
yeah.
potentially coincidental.
Yeah.
So this got me thinking about The Hill.
Oh, I know The Hill.
Can you tell us or remind us, those of us who already kind of know what The Hill is, but tell us about The Hill, what it is, in your own words, and
sure.
whatever else you want to share about your own experience.
The Hill is a concept, a place that came up in the Telepathy Tapes podcast. Lindsay and I have talked about it several times where we've really been listening to it. The podcast is about children who are nonverbal with autism who speak through a facilitator or like a communication board. And there's a lot of controversy around that. But they are finding a lot of the kids are talking about going to this place. It's like a virtual space called The Hill where they can meet up and socialize.
But it's not a computerized world.
It's not a computerized world. It's not like playing Minecraft. It's something that they can just vibrationally shift to. And,
like telepathically travel.
Right.
Astral project in a way.
Right.
In their waking states. In their sleeping state. Anytime they want.
Right.
Supposedly.
I mean, we're following it closely. I don't know what to get.
But you had a
weird experience. Okay, so then I had been thinking about The Hill nonstop. I was like obsessed with it a couple months ago when we were listening to it come out. And I had a lucid dream. I've had lucid dreams before, but I had one. We have a whole episode on it. But basically, I went to this space, flew out my window, went to a space that was all blue. And there was a man there. And I asked him, could I go to The Hill? And he nodded. And then as soon as he nodded, I was instantly in another space. It was kind of like a park, but I only was able to observe things when I thought about, I want to look at the ground. What's the ground look like? Oh, I want to look over to my left. What's it look? I only saw things when I was thinking of it. That was really neat and unique. And I met some teenagers there, or some young adults. We had a conversation. I shared some information. I was like, okay, this is what you're going to do to help me validate this. Like, here's my phone. I gave him my phone number. Yep. I'm a teacher, so I taught him a song with my phone number in it. And I have not been able to validate that. So I know the name of at least one of the people that I met there, and they have my phone number, but I have not been able to validate it. So as profound as the experience was, I don't have validation. So I don't know.
I wonder if you've ever gotten a potential scam call.
And you ignored it. Answer. That's very possible.
And they didn't leave a
message.
Knowing
me, yeah, that's very possible.
Well, let's go with that. Maybe they have tried to reach out. We don't want to lose hope. Okay, well, thank you for reminding us about that. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a link here. So, perfect transition to, what's the word I'm looking for? A segue. Segue into something called shared dream spaces.
Which would be like The Hill?
Yep.
Kind of? Okay.
So one common form of shared dreaming is the experience of visiting the same dream location, often referred to as a shared dream space. So there are two very, very common ones. One, mall world.
Mall world?
I go to the mall a lot in my dreams, which doesn't make any sense because I hate the mall.
That sounds like one of those early, early RPG computer games where you could only write in text like, turn left.
Mall tycoon. And you had to do, everything was like forward slash jump, forward slash high five.
Oh my gosh, you're reminding me. I used to play this game called Lambda Moo, and that's going to date me because I'm only 39, so it's amazing that I remember Lambda Moo.
Past life.
Yeah, Lambda Moo was this place you would go to. This was like early computers, early chat rooms, but you had to like, it was all sort of video gamey because you had to navigate to the rooms by just guessing. You'd be like, type in, turn left, open door, turn right, look around.
Oh, I don't have the patience for
that. And
that's
how you would find your way to chat rooms. It was so wild.
What?
Yeah. And then when
that's
you find
very Alice in Wonderland.
It was kind of. It was
interesting.
Kind of.
I never heard of that.
Lambda Mu. It was set up like a sorority house. So
okay.
So as you're just walking through a house, basically.
Gotcha.
But there's, as you enter each room, there's different people, real life people, virtually in that space, and you can chat with them. And if you're tired of it, you'll just be like, turn around, open door,
find jacuzzi. So several Redditors have described a recurring dream setting known as Mall World, a vast and surreal shopping mall that seems to exist in the collective unconscious. There's a quote that says, I've also been to this weird mall world, like years and years before I even knew about the telepathy tapes or the existence of any of this stuff.
What's in Mall World? Are there cool stores or is it just the standard?
For me, when I am in the mall world, it's usually I'm lost. Being lost is a theme that I have a whole time.
Oh, no.
Lost, or like just as I'm about to find what I'm looking for, I get sidetracked by something. And then it just is this endless, endless tangential quest that is infuriating, very stressful. So then get this. The other collective shared dream space is the park.
I think the park could be described as a park. I was in a park for sure.
The park, that's just wild to me. So a park is a park is a park. Your park could be different from my park. But generally we have a sense of what a park typically is like.
Yeah.
Is a green space that people can share for group activities or walking around, getting fresh air and exercise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being closer to nature without going far, far away. Community parks. Okay. So
I do think those make sense though, because those are places where large groups of populations would go to hang out. They're common, crowded areas.
Pretty universal.
Yeah, it's not like you'd be like Grandpa Joe's garage, right? Like
you couldn't fit everybody in Grandpa Joe's garage.
That's true.
It's got to be someplace that's you know, Mall of America.
I wish it was Disneyland. I wish Disneyland had a virtual space.
But I think it has to be something that everybody can relate to. Like, okay. Even when I was in Belize,
everybody had
there's
a mall.
There's parks.
Okay.
There's parks. And they, I don't know if, there was probably a mall in the bigger cities. There was not a mall where I was. But big stores, sure.
Yeah. Do you think the hill and the park are kind of the same thing? The hill's just like a separate chat room within the park?
Turn left.
Like a hill. Yeah.
Be nonverbal.
Walk uphill.
Yeah. Be cool, because you can't get in there if you're not cool. The people have made it very clear. The people who claim to have gone and go regularly, they're like, we won't let you in. We'll kick you out as soon as we find out you're a jerk.
Yeah. I'm so lucky if I really did go. If I really did, and I don't know if I did. What an honor.
Truly.
To be able to go one time.
I'm not surprised. I'd be shocked if they didn't let you in. I'd be like, they don't know you at all. Or I don't. One of the two. Okay, so. Why does this matter? Social dreaming isn't just an academic thing. It's been used in refugee shelters, police departments, city governments, and even museums. Because dreams can offer a mirror, especially when people aren't consciously able to say how they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be honest, some feelings are too big or weird or complicated to say out loud, but they might show up in a dream about a flooding train station or an angry puppet congress. And that's a real one, by the way.
Yeah.
An angry puppet congress. I think it's worth asking if dreams can help us listen, you know, quote unquote, to a group's subconscious, could they also help us heal or prepare or maybe, just maybe, connect in a way that we haven't yet understood but desperately need right now? What do you think?
I think that I feel bad for people who are like light paranormal listeners. Like, they're like, I came here for Sasquatch, or I came here for for UFOs, because sometimes you go deep. Sometimes you go really deep.
I tend to find like these topics more than stories, and I don't do that on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I actually go in intentionally looking for specific stories.
Yeah.
But I also, if something crops up for me when it's my week that I just can't stop thinking about, I'll just do that, because I sort of feel like it's a little tap on the shoulder. Like, do this thing. Like, I've opened, you know, we've talked about right. before. When a door opens, I tend to just walk through it.
You do.
If a portal opens, I'm just going
Lindsay
through
would
it.
Go.
Doors of opportunity.
Blows my mind.
Doors of parallel universes. I tend to just jump. So I think with my planning of when it's my turn to share stories or whatever, tales of the metaphysical, I just go with whatever's been on my mind. Most recently.
I mean, I absolutely love that you brought this up. I'm going to be thinking about it every time I dream now that I might be dreaming someone else's experience. I think that for me, this is really cool because I'm super curious about these kind of topics. And
I think we need to start a dream bank.
That would be neat.
We could. Maybe just like Reddit. Maybe we just do it through Reddit.
Yeah.
Like, we just start, you know, a thread.
/r/dream bank.
Yeah.
Maybe there is one already. Let me look.
Like I said, if we have thought of it, someone smarter and more proactive has already done it.
It's so funny.
Man is checking Reddit right now.
Reddit, Dream Bank. Oh, no. I mean, there's stuff about dream banks, but it's like, I want a dream bank so I never have to do taxes. Like, they're banks. They're not dreams. Yeah, we'll have to start it.
Okay. Just add that to the old to-do list. I'll probably do it before all the things I need to be doing.
I know. You're so busy.
Well, I feel like I am right now. I feel pretty stressed right now just because I leave on Saturday for a conference that
gosh.
I'm presenting at twice. Once leading the presentation and another time just supporting and co-facilitating with an amazing person from this program that I'm in. But I have not prepared my presentation to the point it needs to be, and it's stressing me.
That is stressful.
But I just keep finding other things that I have to do.
Yeah, don't worry about the podcast. We'll just say, we may not have regular episodes for all, because
get it banked. I'll get it done. I'll probably get it done tomorrow. Yeah. Well, then I have my political kickoff on Thursday night.
Right.
Like, there's just a lot. And we have friends coming over tomorrow who are having a really tough time. So back to social dreaming. Whether you're dreaming alone or dreaming together, or dreaming someone else's dream. Maybe next time you wake up wondering, what was that? You'll consider it might not just be about you.
So cool. It might so cool, Linz.
Be about all of us.
Yeah.
A message from the collective unconscious, or, you know, maybe you just ate dinner too late. And that's all I got.
Let's do homework real quick.
Okay.
So we'd love to hear about like a dream you had for our dream bank.
Or if you've ever had this experience of a shared dream.
Yeah, we'd love to hear about it.
Oh, I wanted to tell you about the setup of it. So the way they set up the room for it is really interesting.
Oh, okay.
So they, and maybe there's other ways of doing it, but the way that I saw it traditionally was they want to break any kind of like group think, traditional group brainstorm type of vibe. So there's no rows, there's no like tables. They sit in a spiral, an outward spiral of chairs.
Weird.
So they try to limit distractions from each other or from any like central place or visual. It's just about talking and sharing and listening.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, like you don't turn and face someone. I have this similar. You just talk out loud. It's for the whole group.
Even though some people might be behind you?
Yep.
You're just, it's unique. I wouldn't do it in a classroom. I would actually to try it out, but I don't know that.
I don't think they'd get it.
I don't think so either.
First of all, there's not an age group I see that working with, except maybe psychology majors in college. Like, I don't see, like, you're going to get lies. If you can even get them to set their chairs up in a dang spiral to begin with, it's a miracle. Then you're going to get liars who then want to one-up each other in K through 3.
Yeah.
4 through 7, you're going to get a few kids who openly share and dominate the conversation the whole time, and the rest just are falling asleep or openly mocking the ones who are sharing. In grades 8 through 12, you're going to get, again, a few who might, after a long time, bravely take one for the team and try to get the ball rolling. And most are just going to be like, this is BS, and it's a waste of my time, and I'm going to go have a smoke.
Oh, I hope they're not smoking.
They're vaping.
Stop smoking, teenagers.
Yeah, some of them
even
are.
Even vaping, it's not good. It's horrible for you.
Horrible for you. But to each their own.
What do you think about this topic? I feel like you didn't get to share a personal
I don't know opinion. Yet. I think I'm definitely still processing it. I do believe in collective consciousness. I have a desperate, desperate wish and craving for humankind to get our shit together. And I'm going to swear intentionally on that. We are connected. We need each other. We need this planet. The planet doesn't need us. Let's be clear. This planet is going to evolve and change. We are going to radically change, and we already have this planet as human influences on it. The planet's going to survive. It's the living things on it, the creatures, the humans, the animals that are not, that are going to have a heck of a time. So the planet's going to be just fine. The rest of us need to connect, find common ground, adapt, change, be better, be vulnerable, be open, be kind, be compassionate and empathetic. And all of those things in the United States, at least, have been minimized at best and actually made illegal at worst by executive order. So I feel like we're in a critical turning point for so many reasons right now in the world, and it really frustrates me because I just think it's so simple. So why would we try to hurt each other? First of all, I think you men, no offense, you've had your chance. Can we just get all women in charge, please, around the world? Let's give that a shot. Let's give the moms a shot at leading. Guarantee you we'd have fewer wars.
Right.
We're not sending our babies.
Right.
Or we would change laws that said, if you want war, then you and yours got to be the first online. We need more women governing, for sure. And there are some very powerful, strong examples already in this country and also in others.
In other countries, yeah.
Get it together, human beings. Mm-hmm. It's not that hard.
I wonder if that's why sometimes we're so curious about paranormal stuff, and it's like a detachment
from
protection, I guess. Yeah, because the reality is a lot of fear mongering and a lot of anxiety and a lot of stress. Whereas, like, you know, the esoteric stuff is like, ooh, that's interesting. Ooh, that's, it excites me more.
But I don't think it's a distraction. I think, I see what you're saying, because it is, it's kind of an escape from just talking about normal humdrum day-to-day mm-hmm. stuff, or what's in the news, the general news. But I don't think they're separate. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think all of it is connected, and all of it is potentially tools
mm-hmm.
to help with the day-to-day humdrum reality.
That's true. That's true.
And I feel like I'm just trying to draw connections between what I believe is a very complex but beautiful, healing, interconnected spiritual plane or realm or existence, right? Drawing connections from that to what is really, in reality, very simple. Our human lives, we make them so complicated unnecessarily. Yeah. We have all of the resources on this planet, in this country alone, to end hunger, to end homelessness, to cure diseases, to eradicate so many problems, and we choose, actively choose, to do harm. And that's not how we're designed. I really don't think that's how we're designed.
I think you're totally onto it. I listening to you, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Because we use tarot, we use astrology, we use all these things to help us understand or challenge our thinking when it comes to, help us make sense of real stuff.
Right.
And challenge our thinking around real stuff.
Right. Because there's a lot of noise. And so I think those are just like meditative practices.
Mm-hmm.
And meditation is just focused thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So if we just calm our bodies, calm our minds, calm our breathing, calm our space, even for just a few minutes, and need a tool like tarot cards or tea leaves or whatever, bones, chicken bones, whatever it might be in the world that you're using to make sense of the nonsensical.
Yeah.
That, go for it. That's problem solving. That's humans. That's what sets us apart, is that we can design tools to solve our problems. But I think we often over design solutions that are very simply solved if we first address the major blocks, like greed, like power imbalance, like all the isms in the world, and we just collectively, because I believe most people are good, if the collective good says enough, if the collective good stands up to the bully ways of the world
mm-hmm.
and says enough.
There's more collective good.
Absolutely. Than the
bullies, for sure.
Absolutely. Bullies in the negative are just louder.
Yeah.
And I think it's very aggressive. Hate and fear is very aggressive. Well, hate and fear are the same. They come from the same thing. Hate is born out of fear. So, and ignorance. Well, fear is born out of ignorance and hate is born out of fear. I truly believe that. So if we can tackle things with just conversation and finding common ground and asking questions and listening to people's lived experiences and believing them, even if you don't get it, whatever the case is, it's giving up what's in it for you and focusing still on, yeah, but what's in it for us?
Yeah. Yeah. And you can do it in little ways. Like you tap me on the shoulder when it's like, believe, even if you're not experiencing it. Yeah, like other people are going through things. You don't have to get it. You don't have to identify with it. But I can give you an example. Well, I don't know if I can. Someone I know is a healthcare worker, and a patient came in who was having, like, not schizophrenia, but like
similar, paranoia
and actual kind of she was seeing things, she was feeling things, and this person who I know is like, well, it wasn't real, so it was, she just, you know, it was annoying. It kind of, he described it like it was an annoying waste of his time, he had other things to do, and I was trying to have a conversation with him about, okay, but this is real for her, for that patient, and maybe it's not real, right? Like, I'm not a doctor, you're not a doctor, like, let the doctor decide, but...
But perception is reality.
She's going through this and needs some help.
And you don't have to play along, so to speak,
right,
with the delusion or the paranoia or the hallucination, but you can sympathize or empathize with, that must be really scary.
That must be scary.
That must be unnerving. How can I help you right now,
yes,
make this feel
exactly,
better?
Exactly.
And that goes for any situation. You don't have to understand it. You don't have to agree with it. But to just say, how can I help you feel better,
mm-hmm,
right here, right now? And then when they tell you, when you ask, you're signing up. Don't ask, I guess, if you aren't willing to help. But you should at least say something empathetic, like, that must be really scary. That must be really difficult. That must be challenging. That must hurt a lot.
Mm-hmm.
If you stop there, you've already made huge progress.
Mm-hmm.
If you then take it to the next step, how may I help you right now?
Yeah.
Then that's a massive next step, but it's not necessary most of the time.
Yeah, and there's layers, because the person might not even know how they can get help,
right,
or how they want help. But
yeah,
but it's a way to have a little more love in the world, for sure, a little more kindness.
Definitely, I have been trying to find the right word for meeting this aggressive, loud hate and ignorance with an equally passionate counter vibe. But I don't want to call it like aggressive compassion, because that's like, my dog is like that. My dog is aggressively friendly. It's not working for him. But if I could be like, I want to coin a term or find a term that it is the same idea as aggressive, matched in its intensity, but not with the negative connotations.
Oh, sure, there's a word.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Like, where you can still be...
Like, not ambitious, but when you're...
Well, there's assertive.
No, it's a different...
But I want more than assertive. Oh, here's your child.
What? She's still got dance. Hi, babe.
It was testing, so we ended really early.
Okay.
Oh, well, we're wrapping up, so you're in luck.
I'm so hot, Linz.
I'll pay for
my head out.
Well, thank you. So you got to say your coin phrase.
Class dismissed.
And don't open the door.